In this lesson, we're going to focus on the ASA's aspect of routing. Here's what we're going to cover. We're going to take a look at the default behaviors, which is going to be surprising to many of you. We'll take a look at static and default routes, how to use route maps with redistribution, and of course, the big three, OSPF, RIP, and EIGRP. So let's get started. With the ASA, if there's a packet destined for a host, for example, a DMZ server that has a translation already in place, the first thing that the ASA is going to do when it receives that packet, it's going to say, oh, there's an XLite. Where does that XLite lead to? And it's going to actually make the egress interface decision based on the translation. It doesn't even consult the routing table for XLites it currently has. If there's a packet coming in, there's a static, but no XLite created yet, it will create the XLite and still use that instead of the routing table. So be aware that if you have your statics in place, that could impact your routing decisions that the firewall is going to make. Once the firewall knows the exit or egress interface, it then will consult the routing table and look for the next hop, if it's not directly connected, on who to forward that packet to. So how do we actually configure the routing on the ASA? Well, the most simplest thing to do is to create a static route. And I kind of cringe when I say the word static because sometimes we think of a network address translation static. I'm talking about a hard-coded route with the route command. The syntax is really simple. It's route, space, and then the interface that's going to be used to reach the given network. So if you have a network on the inside, for example, the 10.1.1 subnet, you'd say route, space, inside, space, 10.1.1.0, space, a 3-octet mask, which would be 255.255.255.0, space, and then the next hop, the reachable router to go ahead and forward that packet along the path. At the very end, you can also add the administrative distance. It's 1 by default, but if you wanted to create a floating static route, you could specify a number like 200 or 205 or something that was worse than your routing protocols so that the static route would only take effect if a route that had a better administrative distance was not present on the ASA. So that's the basics of a static route. And while we're there, why not talk about a default route as well? To create a default route, the syntax is route, space, the interface name that's going to be used to reach the default network, if you will. In most cases, it's the outside, space, 0, space, 0, and then the next hop to reach it. So if I had a router on the outside interface that was at 20.0.0.1, and that was my default gateway for the internet, I would say route, space, outside, space, 0, space, 0, and then 20.0.0.1, enter. And poof, I've now got a default route. All the zeros, if you have all zeros, you can shortcut that with a 0, space, 0, or if you feel like, if you're being paid by the character, go ahead, you can put in all the zeros, it doesn't matter. The actual output that the ASA understands will be the same. Now, as good as static routes are, what if we want to load balance? Can we do that? The answer is on the ASA, yes, we can. We can load balance, but you can't load balance across different interfaces. For example, you can't load balance between the DMZ and the outside and say, I want one packet to go this way and one packet to go that way. Doesn't work, but you can load balance off one interface. Here's what I mean. On the outside interface, if we had 3 possible default gateways and we wanted to load balance across all 3, we could say route, outside, 0, space, 0, and then put the next hop of our first default gateway. And then we could do the same exact command and a different IP address for the second default gateway. And the command again with a modification for the next hop of the third default gateway. So you can have 3 equal cost routes per interface, and the ASA will load balance across them equally if you need to. There's one other trick that you deserve to be aware of, and that is, can we somehow put a 4th default route? The answer is of equal cost. The answer is you can if you allocate that for your tunnel traffic. If you have IPsec users, VPN users who are coming in, you can provide a default route for your VPN users. And the syntax is the same as the static route we did earlier. It's route, outside, 0, space, 0, and then the next hop, space, and the keyword tunneled. Then your VPN clients, when they connect in, if there's packets that the ASA doesn't know how to reach, they will, for tunneled users traffic, they'll use the default gateway that has the tunneled keyword at the end. So theoretically, you could have 4 default routes off the outside interface, but one would be allocated for your VPN users' traffic. So let's leverage a couple of things that we've learned and get some fault tolerance with our routing on the ASA. We know how to create a static route, and we know how to create a floating static route. Remember, a floating static route is simply a static route that has a abnormally high, higher than one, administrative distance. So if I had a route that was administrative distance of 200, for example, that's worse than connected, it's worse than EIGRP, it's worse than OSPF, it's worse than RIP. But if all those went away, then that floating static route would be valid. So what we can do is we can actually create an SLA monitor and track a route. For example, if R1 is our default gateway to get to a certain destination, we can have our ASA ping consistently R1, and if R1 stops responding, we can actually take a specific route out of the routing table. Well, what happens if you take a specific route out of the routing table? Well, any port's good in a storm. So if you lose a route that had an administrative distance of 1, for example, and it goes away because of tracking, then your floating static route could take effect and you could forward traffic based on that floating static route, which is now the best administrative distance because the other one's been taken out with your SLA. So here's how we set up an SLA. It's really simple. In configuration mode, you say SLA space monitor space and an SLA monitor ID. In this example, I'm going to go ahead and use 1. When you press enter, that's going to put you into mode configuration for that SLA monitor. And then you can specify the type of traffic you want to test with. On the ASA, I believe we're still limited to just ICMP tests against a host. So we'd say type echo protocol IP ICMP echo space and then the target. So if R1 was at 20.0.0.1 and you wanted to ping at him, that'd be great. Space, keyword interface, space, and then the name of your ASA interface you want to reach that device. So the syntax would read like this. Type echo protocol IP ICMP echo space 20.0.0.1 space interface space outside. And then you can also specify when that should start. You can say SLA monitor schedule 1, life forever, start time now. And that just says get going on it. Well, so far we have this SLA monitor, and it's not really that exciting because it's not doing too much to help our routing. But what we can do is we can set up tracking. So use the command track and use a track ID. In this case, I'm going to use 123. So our SLA monitor ID is 1, and our track ID is going to be 123. We say track 123 RTR space, and then you put in the SLA monitor ID. So track 123 RTR 1 reachability. And now we have this mechanism that's testing and verifying that that 20.0.0.1 is reachable. So what? Well, what did we actually assist anything with? We haven't done anything as far as helpful yet. The key is we want to take that track ID of 123 in our example and tie it to a route. So for example, if we had route outside and the network we were trying to reach was 10.1.2 on the outside interface for whatever reason with a 3-octet mask and the next hop was 10.5.5.1, at the end of that static route, we could add 2 key elements, the keyword track space and then the actual track ID we created. And here's how that all marries itself together. If that host that we're doing the SLA on, it becomes unreachable because we put the track 123 on a specific route, that route goes away. And if that route goes away, then if you had a floating static route to support and back that guy up, the floating static route would take effect. So here's the big picture bouncing ball. We set up an SLA. I strongly recommend you practice this a few times. You set up an SLA that's tracking a certain host. When that host goes down, because a specific route in your routing table used the track option with a track ID that you created, that route no longer is valid in the routing table. And that would cause an inferior route, like an administrative distance of 200, for example, for that same network to now be valid and pop itself into the routing table. That, my friends, is a very important skill that I recommend strongly that you test and make sure you have down pat. If you have a client, a DHCP client, as your ASA on an interface with the IP address DHCP, many times you'll use the set route option, and that simply tells the ASA, okay, I'm a DHCP client, I can accept that, and go ahead and use the default route assigned to me by the DHCP server. But if you want, you can do a DHCP client route track and your track ID number for that tracking we just set up. And if that tracking is, that route becomes unavailable, we will then go ahead and pull that out of our routing table. And so if you had a floating default static route with a worst administrative distance, that would pop in and be used. So you can use the tracking with static routes. You can also use it with a DHCP learned default route. Another tool that's really interesting is the concept of a standard access list. A lot of times people think, well, standard access list, they're pretty limited. They only, you know, based on source IP address, that's it. Well, on an ASA, the only time we're going to really use a standard ACL is when we're working with route maps and redistribution. So keep that in mind in this next discussion as we take a look at the various routing protocols and using route maps to manipulate route redistribution and other aspects in getting our ASA trained on how to forward traffic. Our first of the big three routing protocols on the ASA is OSPF. It's the one most likely to be encountered, quite frankly, in most environments that are using dynamic routing protocols. The great news is this, it's so easy to configure. All you do is exactly, pretend you're on a router. You go into configuration mode, you type router space OSPF space and a process ID. Again, that's locally significant to the ASA. And then you put your network statement in. Network, and put your network in, put the mask in, and then specify it to an area. There are no wildcard masks on the ASA anywhere. It's all just normal masks. So if I wanted to add the 10 network to OSPF2, I'd say router space OSPF2, network, press enter, network 10.0.0.0 space 255.0.0.0, and then the keyword area, and then the area number, in this case, area 0. That would mean that any interface on my ASA that had the first octet of its IP address in the 10 network space would be included as like the mother may I participate command, exactly like a router. Any interfaces that begin with 10, poof, you're now in. Can we redistribute between OSPF and other routing protocols? Absolutely yes. Guess what the command is? You got it. It's redistribute. So you might ask, what exactly can we redistribute into OSPF, bring it in? Well, we could bring in connected, so redistribute connected. We could bring in static routes, redistribute static. We could redistribute from a second OSPF process running on our same box. Maybe you have OSPF1 and OSPF2 running, and you want to import some routes from OSPF1 into OSPF2. So you go into router OSPF2 and say redistribute OSPF1 and bring them in. Now, one of the interesting things with OSPF, you know, it's classless and everything else. However, when you redistribute routes, it'll always be classful routes only unless you use the subnets keyword on your redistribution. Also on your redistribution, you can include the metric if you want to assign the metric. By default, OSPF has one for you, so it'll still accept it if you don't assign the metric. You can also specify the metric type, whether it's going to grow as a packet goes through the network or whether it's going to remain static from the redistribution. You can also tag it. That's great. If you want to tag a value of 15 to a route, that way you can work with it and manipulate it later. And on each of the redistributions, you can also use the route map command. So if we create route maps, we'll cover that in a little bit. Your route maps could manipulate traffic a certain way and, for example, match based on the next hop, match on the metric, match on the IP address, et cetera, and then do redistribution based on the conditions of that route map. So we can redistribute RIP and EIGRP as well all into OSPF. One word of advice I would offer to you, I know it's a security lab, and sometimes we think, oh, it's a security lab. I don't need to worry too much about OSPF types and stub areas and not-so-stub areas and autonomous system boundary routers, et cetera, et cetera. However, I would encourage you at least to test and work with redistribution a few times on the ASA. Maybe create a simple route map that's matching on the next hop and changing the metric and setting the tag, for example, as part of a route map. So when you do a redistribution, you do redistribute space RIP, for example, And then you can specify subnets, and you can specify a route map. So redistribute, blah, 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 and then route map and the route map you've created. And verify that it works. It would be a shame, I'll tell you this, it'd be a darn shame if you had some simple redistribution task in the lab itself, and because of lack of practicing it, you had to figure it out. Because it could take 45 minutes to an hour to get it all dialed in for a 2 or 3 minute task. So again, every technology that I'm sharing with you in this audio bootcamp, there's no, fluff in this presentation. It's all stuff that you definitely deserve to practice and make sure you have down cold before you actually go and show up at the lab. We've touched a bit on redistribution. Let me just also point out that redistribution applies to all of our routing protocols, EIGRP, OSPF, and RIP. We can redistribute in either direction between any of those routing protocols. So whatever applies to OSPF, with the exception of the subnets keyword and the metric types, would also apply to RIP and EIGRP. Let's take a look at some other options that are important to you in the security lab. How about authentication of your routing protocols? In OSPF, we're going to do OSPF authentication inside of the interfaces. So if I go to interface inside, for example, I can specify OSPF message-digest-key and the key ID. If we used one, for example, the keyword MD5 and then the string. Cisco is a great password for the lab anyway. And then we'd also specify in interface configuration mode OSPF authentication message-digest to specify that we are using MD5 authentication. So again, little things like that are fairly simple to do. Make sure you're comfortable setting up OSPF authentication. And our labs, by the way, the volume 1 and volume 2 are excellent to walk you through all of these technologies and make sure that the configurations that you do are solid and are correct. Also in the interface, we could specify the cost if we wanted to, the priority, the hello interval, the dead interval. Most of those really don't need to be changed. But if you did need to for some weird reason, that's where you do it. In addition to authentication for the interface, we could also do authentication from router configuration mode. So area 1, authentication space message-digest, or area 0, authentication message-digest would turn that feature on. We can also set the flags, area 0, well, area 0 is not going to be a stub, but area 1 stub, and you can also specify the default cost for an area all in router configuration mode. If your ASA is acting as an autonomous system boundary router and you're redistributing some external routes in, you can create a summary address for those networks, and that's done in router configuration mode with the summary-address command, and then put in your summary, the network, space, and then the mask. If you're an area border router between two OSPF areas, you can also summarize those by going again into OSPF configuration mode and specifying area, space, 1, or whatever your area is, the keyword range, and apply your summary. So the summary address is for ASBRs, and the area range command is for area border routers. Exactly the same concepts as on iOS. So what are the chances of your ASA being a member of a frame relay network? The answer is about 0, because there is no serial interfaces on an ASA, well, except for the console port. But in any event, if you had some weird scenario where you had to statically define an OSPF neighbor, you could. In router configuration mode, you'd specify neighbor, space, the address of that neighbor, and the keyword interface and the interface name used to reach that neighbor. So that's how you statically define, if you needed to, a neighbor in OSPF. On your ASA, if you need to inject a default route, there's a couple of ways of doing it. You could create a static route and redistribute it in. That would work. You could also, in router configuration mode, specify default-information space originate space always. And that will also inject a default route. Hopefully the ASA knows how to get places because it's claiming it will. But if that's what you need to do, that's exactly how you do it. If OSPF is configured correctly and neighbors are all cooperating, life is good. But what about the verification portion of this? There are some great commands you can use to verify. One of them is show OSPF and your process ID. Or you can just do show OSPF, press enter. You can do show OSPF interface, and verify that the interfaces that you believe are in OSPF are really there. You can also do a restart, a kickstart, if you will, of OSPF with the clear OSPF 1 or OSPF 2 or whatever process ID you used. Again, that's not clear config OSPF because that'll wipe out your OSPF, but clear OSPF and your process ID, and that'll give it a nice fresh start so you can go ahead and kick it off again. If your neighbors aren't coming up, again, verify you have good layer 1 connectivity. Maybe verify a ping, verify you have the basic connectivity between yourself and them. And then if you needed to debug, here's what I'd recommend. Who are you going to be pairing with? You're going to be pairing with an iOS router. So you can do a debug IP OSPF adjacencies on the router and see exactly what's going on. See if there's an authentication mismatch or an area mismatch, or the mask is the incorrect length. All of those things will cause your neighborships not to form. Our next topic is RIP. This will be a pretty straightforward one. To configure RIP, it's router RIP. Enter. Then you put in your network, and just like an iOS, you put in network space and the network you want, and it's classful. So if it's an A, class A, class B, class C, just be prepared that anything in those ranges are going to be, you know, brought in. You can also specify passive interface default. Not a bad idea. If you only want it running and advertising on certain interfaces, you can do a passive interface default and a no passive interface for the interfaces you want to participate. I would also recommend being aware of the version 2, which is lacking by default. So version 2, literally, that's the command in router configuration mode. You can source a default route if you want to with default hyphen information space originate, just like on OSPF. And no auto summary, so we don't by default generate a summary route inside of RIP. I would recommend you be flexible too. As you practice with RIP, maybe you go through a exact process of, okay, no auto summary, version 2, passive interface default. My good friend Anthony Sequeira says, be flexible. In the lab, if they ask you to use OSPF process 10, use 10. If they ask you to not use the no auto summary command in RIP, don't use the no auto summary in RIP. And they want to make sure that you understand how to configure it and make it work. And a couple other tricks that you can do with RIP. If you wanted to, we could use a distribute list. This is where standard ACLs come in very handy. And we could say distribute list space, the name of the access list, in, and a certain interface. So if you want to not allow certain routes to come into the routing table, you can use a distribute list to avoid that. You can also stop sharing with others. You can use a distribute list with your access list outbound as well on a given interface. So you have total control of the routes that you're going to receive and send with RIP. Also be aware that the same concept of redistribution applies to RIP as it does with OSPF. So you can use route maps to control what comes in and what goes out, and the similar functionality with the redistribute. You can redistribute in static, you can bring in OSPF, you can bring in EIGRP, and you can use a route map to control exactly which of those routes are coming in. So how do you troubleshoot RIP? Let's say you're not getting the routes you expect to get. We've already discussed the fact that maybe we should verify that layer 1, 2, and 3 are happy. Maybe verify we can do a ping to a neighbor that we're expecting updates from. We can do a show RIP database on the ASA. We can look at the configuration, show run router RIP just for the RIP portion. We can debug RIP events, debug RIP database. And of course, on your iOS end, you can also do your debugging there as well. Our last topic in this routing section is EIGRP. EIGRP usually gets more press than RIP because it's Cisco's, and also it's a much better routing protocol than RIP. But do you know what the absolute best routing protocol to use in the lab is? The absolute best. It's the one they ask you to create and configure. So you need to be comfortable with each of the routing protocols and how they operate and how to set them up. Most of it's just basic configuration. EIGRP, identical to that on a router as far as setting it up. Router, EIGRP, and an AS number. Now, you remember and you know that the autonomous system number needs to match between your all your devices in your routing domain. So if we're using EIGRP1 on the router, we need to use EIGRP1 on the ASA. Once you're in router configuration mode, you specify a network statement. So I'd recommend you put in the literal addresses with the masks so there's no confusion on which interfaces are going to participate in EIGRP. You can use the passive interface default, and then say no passive interfaces as well in the interfaces you want to participate. But because the eGRP is so granular, it'd make more sense just to specifically place every single interface that you want to participate in literally with a 32-bit IP address. We can also use the distribute list for inbound and outbound. If we're bringing in routes that we want or controlling routes, you don't have to accept everything your neighbor says. So the same thing as RIP, we can use a distribute list to control what comes in and what goes out. Let's say your ASA is at the end of the line. There's no EIGRP routes behind it. It's like a branch on the network, a leaf, if you will, on the network. You can use the EIGRP stub command inside of the router EIGRP process, and that will basically allow your firewall to tell anybody who's looking for a route saying, hey, have you seen this network? You're basically going to say, I don't know where it is. And that way, you can help avoid the stuck and active problem that sometimes happens with EIGRP when routes are actively being sought for. Similar to OSPF, we can do authentication with EIGRP. It's done in interface configuration mode. So you go into interface configuration and say authentication mode EIGRP 1, if that's your AS number, MD5. Once you've said you're going to use MD5 for authentication of EIGRP, then you need to put your string in. And the syntax in interface config is authentication key EIGRP 1, and then your string, Cisco or whatever the password is, the keyword key ID, KEY-ID space and 1. The key ID and the string has to match on both peers. Although it's unlikely, if you need to statically define a neighbor, maybe you're going over some type of a non-broadcast network or something else weird going on, you could go into a router EIGRP and type in neighbor space, the IP address of your neighbor, the keyword interface, and the interface that you're going to use to reach that neighbor. If you wanted to summarize addresses, you could use the summary-address command. This one is used in interface configuration mode. And the syntax is summary-address space EIGRP 1, if that's your AS number, and then the network and the mask that you want to summarize. You can also tag on a distance for that so that your routing protocols will see that as a better or worse administrative distance. Another caveat with EIGRP, because it is a hybrid protocol, it does have some of the benefits, issues, etc. with distance vector routing, and one of those is split horizon. Split horizon is on by default. It simply means if I hear updates on one interface, don't advertise those updates out the same interface. If you want to turn off, for any reason, split horizon, you simply go to the interface and say no, split-horizon, EIGRP, and the AS number. Not likely to be a big issue with your ASAs. If it was frame relay and I was a hub in a hub and spoke environment, that might be a huge deal like DMVPN. But for here on the ASA, probably not a big challenge. So the big acid test to verify that things are working is to do a show route. If the routes show up in the routing table sourced from their correct routing protocols, that's wonderful. It would be well to remember too that the administrative distances by default for RIP are 120, OSPF is 110, internal EIGRP is 90, directly connected networks are 0, and static routes by default are 1 unless you artificially inflate that for the benefit of a floating static route. And why does that matter? It matters because routing is important. If you have a 25-bit route and a 24-bit route, and the same first 24 bits are the same, which one is going to be used? Well, if they're both going to the same network, the longer one is going to win. However, they would both show up in the routing table. And if I had RIP with a 25-bit network and OSPF with a 24-bit network, they would both show up in the routing table because they're considered different network lengths and different routes, and therefore they'd both show up. So just be aware that the routing that exists on your iOS, all those bells, whistles, features, including virtual circuits and everything else, as far as routing tricks go, are available on the ASA. And one last note regarding routing updates. Because routing updates are dynamic, if you have a failover situation with ASA 1 and ASA 2, ASA 2 is your standby, or you're doing multiple context failover. Actually, if you're doing multiple context failover, you're not supporting routing protocols. So in single mode with a primary and a secondary firewall for failover, there may be a slight delay on the secondary unit if it goes active for all the routes to be populated correctly. So don't freak if there's a failover condition and your whole network goes belly up, just give it a few seconds for your routing protocols to converge on that secondary ASA that's now active, and you'll be good to go. Our next section is object groups, which is going to leverage what we talked about with access lists. Being able to create very long and very detailed access lists with very little configuration. I'll see you in the next audio section.